Hey everybody, this is Ben here, host of this here podcast, and I just wanted to pipe in here before the actual episode starts to provide a little disclaimer. This is something that I record these episodes in advance, you know, well in advance of when I release them, and we found out something as a nation after I recorded and edited this podcast, but before I released it, and I just wanted to mention it here, because otherwise, if you listen to the podcast, you might go like, well, why the hell isn't he mentioning this obvious thing that is incredibly relevant to the topic of this episode? The episode in question, the episode you're about to listen to, it's about a movie called Matango, Attack of the Mushroom People. And when I recorded this, I didn't know that the President of the United States, Donald Trump, had an incredibly tiny penis shaped like a mushroom. I mean, I kind of assumed that always, but we didn't get the confirmation until his mistress Stormy Daniels, who he paid off in order to so she wouldn't talk about how she fucked his tiny mushroom dick before the election, she revealed in her autobiography that in fact Donald Trump has a tiny mushroom dick. And of course, had I known this, every part of this episode about mushroom monsters would have had some reference to Donald Trump and his tiny mushroom dick. But so I just wanted to say this here, to throw this out so that you weren't confused. Also, I just want to preface this because later on in the episode, I do this thing where I insert clips, like, between my intro and my review, I put a clip of the trailer, and then between my review and my pitches, I put, like, dialogue from the movie. But this is a foreign movie. It's all Japanese dialogue, and that seemed kind of weird to put that, since I feel like I have a mostly American audience, or English-speaking audience anyway. So instead of that, I found a clip on YouTube, which is just all of the creepy laughs. It's, like, slightly over a minute of all the mushrooms laughing. And that's not even something I mentioned in my review. The mushrooms have a really creepy laugh, so it would have been kind of confusing to get to that point and just hear that clip completely out of context. So that's the context for it. When you get to that, you're not going insane. That's something from the movie. And also, Donald Trump has a tiny mushroom dick. If I haven't said that enough, he has a tiny mushroom dick. She compared it to the character Toad from the Mario games. And that's a thing that we all as Americans now have to know about. We can all visualize Donald Trump's tiny mushroom dick and his Yeti pubes. There aren't Yetis in this movie. That's just another thing she used as a point of comparison. I mean, the mushrooms are kind of like Yetis. They're these kind of, you know, monsters that live in the woods, or I guess the jungle. So maybe this whole movie was just a huge precursor to learning about Donald Trump's mushroom dick and his Yeti pubes. But I don't know. I don't think Ishiro Honda, the director, was planning that out in advance. I don't think he was a psychic who could foresee that one day we would know about the president's mushroom dick. But that's it. Thank you, I guess. You're welcome. I don't even know how to end this. Just listen to the podcast. It's a good episode, I think, at least relative to my other episodes. The whole podcast probably sucks ass, but this is a thing. Go listen. Hi everybody, my name is Ben, and welcome to Headcanon, the podcast dedicated to exploring the vast reaches of cinematic universes that never were and never shall be. Every week on this podcast, I select a movie at random from a carefully curated list of some of the weirdest and most obscure movies I've never seen. I watch and review it, and then I try to imagine what it would be like if I was given the opportunity to expand it into a soulless, cash-grab multimedia franchise. I pitch sequels, prequels, spin-offs, crossovers, gritty reboots, TV adaptations, video games, and even porn parodies, all to test the limits of just how self-indulgent a podcast can be, and to see how far and how deeply I can crawl up into my own asshole. Today's episode is devoted to a movie that I feel is the quintessential example of the weird and obscure movie part of that intro. It's a movie that I've had on my list for a long time. It was actually one of the first I put on there, even before I had access to a physical copy of it, and it just sort of fit so perfectly with what my conception of this podcast was. The idea that it would be about movies most people hadn't ever heard of, that I'd be discovering for the first time, and that hopefully most people listening would be discovering for the first time, and just those sort of strange cult movies that people don't talk about. And this is one that I'm kind of surprised isn't talked about more, just because it has some very significant connections to other well-known movies. It's produced by Toho and directed by Ishiro Honda, the production company and director of the original Godzilla movie. Honda also went on to do many of the sequels and spin-offs and so forth, and is known as, if you want to call him the king of kaiju films being Japanese giant monster movies. And this is actually a kaijin film called Matengo from 1963, and as far as I can tell from my initial research on it, it is technically a part of the Godzilla universe, though it is evidently in a very sort of tangential fashion. The film is set on an island that is initially thought to be deserted, but then, of course, revealed to have several monstrous creatures on it, much like Monster Island from the Godzilla films, and apparently the two islands exist in the same universe and are somewhat adjacent to each other. This one, I didn't even know this existed, and I feel a little embarrassed that I didn't, but apparently there was a TV show in the 90s, only in Japan. Apparently there's a translated version on Crunchyroll, but I don't have a subscription to that service. But it was called Godzilla Island, and it was a series of 256 three-minute short episodes, and they would cross over Godzilla with other giant monsters, most obviously already established in that franchise. But at one point, Godzilla goes to the island of Matengo and fights, among other villains, Hedorah, one of my favorite Godzilla villains, the smog monster, but also the creatures from the movie Matengo, apparently. I've not watched this movie yet. It looks very good. It looks like, or at least very much up my alley. I don't know how good it is in an objective sense, but it's also tied to something I've loved since I was a kid, the Godzilla movies. And apparently, the Matengo creatures, and I'm kind of bearing the lead, I do know what they are. I've been spoiled at least to that extent. Because the subtitle of this film is Attack of the Mushroom People, so guess what? The monsters are mushroom people. But anyway, they're apparently in the Nintendo video game of Godzilla as well. I played that game. I don't remember them, but I didn't get very far in the game because it's very difficult and actually not very good. If you don't remember it, it was called... And this, I didn't remember that this was the title of it. It was called Monster of Monsters? Godzilla, Monster of Monsters? Which, I always remembered it as King of the Monsters. Maybe I just renamed it that in my head, because that's a name that actually makes sense. Monster of Monsters sounds really fucking dumb. But anyway, the Matengo monsters are apparently in that game, but I never got that far, because you have to, like, it's this weird grid-based system to go to the levels, and it's really hard to explain. Don't ever play it. It's a shitty game. But Matengo, it's based on a short story by William H. Hodgson called A Voice in the Night. And I didn't know anything about this author, but apparently he was a contemporary and possibly an inspiration to H.P. Lovecraft, who is, of course, an inspiration to many writers today. He's created an entire genre of Lovecraftian fiction. And apparently the short story that this film is based on is sort of a literary precursor to the entire Lovecraftian genre, as far as I can tell. Apparently Hodgson specialized in... like horror at sea tales, so he did a lot of like the mysteries of the ocean and the creatures yet to be discovered that dwell there, and Matengo is one example of that, where a crew of I don't know if they're pirates or if they're sailors or what are they crash on an island and they discover it to be the home of these evil mushroom creatures. And apparently it's also been adapted into an episode of the 1958 series Suspense. It's an anthology show that I've never seen. It's sort of like a precursor to Twilight Zone, I think. I found the episode on YouTube, but the quality was so bad that I couldn't even really watch it. The sound wasn't good. I couldn't hear what the people were saying. So I'm going to try to track down a better copy of it and maybe come back with a bonus episode where I just relay my experience watching that. But this has been a story that's been floating around for a while, and like I said, it influenced one of the most influential horror writers of all time, or if not this story, at least the author. And this is, I guess, his most famous story, so I assume Lovecraft read it as well. Oh, and I almost forgot, back to that Godzilla Island series, which, again, I've never seen it. I'm going to see if I can track it down. If it is on Crunchyroll, I might buy a subscription to Crunchyroll just to fucking watch this show. Actually, I've always wanted to get into Ultraman as well. I think they have those on there. But anyway... apparently, the Godzilla Island show, and it was, you know, as you imagine, Godzilla, it's monsters fighting monsters, and with miniature sets and everything, but it's, when I say miniature, in the normal Godzilla movies, obviously it's a guy in a suit and, you know, fake cardboard buildings. Apparently, in Godzilla Island, it's action figures. They literally use action figures on, like, miniature sets to do all the giant monster action. And I looked up a trailer, kind of a little bit on YouTube of it, and it looks... I mean, it looks cheesy. You know they're action figures. You can see it from watching it. But, I mean, it looks probably about as good as you can do something with action figures like that. It's not even stop motion, I don't think. I think it's literally them just moving it around, like, you know, with strings and wires and things. So kind of an interesting thing in itself. Maybe, I don't know. I'm going to try to track it down. But that also means that there are Matengo action figures. This weird, obscure movie that nobody has ever seen has an action figure line, or at least a couple characters to work with. But that's Matango. This is the movie that I'm going to watch this week. I'm going to pause the podcast here in a second. But first, before I get to that, as always, I talk about the movies that are also on my list from the people involved with this. And I didn't look up any of the other actors. I just looked up the director, Ashiro Honda. And of course, I'm going to watch Godzilla at some point. I have that section of my podcast where I watch franchises. Godzilla, there are so many of them, and so many spinoffs, I don't know how I'm going to do it exactly. I think I might separate it by periods, so like, you know, there's like the Heisei period and the I can't remember all of them. I think they're designated by the emperors of Japan that are alive at the time of those, when they're making the movies, and so they have different sort of eras, so I think I might separate them that way. But he also did a lot of stuff independent of Godzilla. He did Half Human, The Mysterians, The H-Man, The Human Vapor, War of the Gargantuas, Latitude Zero. I usually like describe what those movies are, but I don't actually know what any of those movies are about. I have them all on my list. I own them all on digital, obviously, in those cases. But I can't really describe them, and I didn't want to take the time to look them up. I just wanted to kind of get right into this. So, and that's what I'm gonna do now. I'm gonna get right into this. I'm gonna pause the podcast. I'm gonna watch Matango from 1963, and then I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna tell you what I think.
Seven young people shipwrecked on a mysterious island. The island was deserted. Not even birds or animals dared to come here. What did they find?
Hey! Hey!
Seaweed, fish, and turtles' eggs. Anything we can eat, as well as snakes and lizards.
Just let me finish. There's a lot of grass growing around here. You can eat the roots. You can eat the roots of a lot of plants here. You never thought of that, did you?
They were driven to the edge of starvation. Food was scarce, and they were forbidden to eat the mushrooms that grew on the island. Fear and hunger turned them against each other.
I'll kill you.
Matango will help me live.
I haven't been hungry since I left the ship.
Mamie. Oh, help me. Help me.
Please. Can't we eat the mushrooms now?
That would really be the end of us.
Akiko!
Matango, the horrible mushrooms. Matango, the vegetable monster. Can they escape the dreaded Matango? You'll find out when you see Matango.
And I'm back, and I've watched Matango, Attack of the Mushroom People, from 1963. I should point out that subtitle is actually only the American title. The original Japanese one's just called Matango. And Matango, I think I made a mistake in my intro. It doesn't actually refer to the island itself. But rather the species of mushroom, I assume fictional species of mushroom because it's super intelligent and kills people, so I hope it's not real. But anyway, the movie is about, like I said, it's a group of people. In this case, there are these just vacationing Japanese people. There's a rich guy who owns a yacht, and he brought his friends aboard to go on vacation, and they get washed ashore on this island. And I was going to say, then they encounter the mushroom people, but that's really not what this movie's about. I mean, it is ultimately about that, but it's a movie that, I mean, it wasn't really what I was expecting from the King of Kaiju films. And I also mentioned this is a Kaijin film, which if you don't know what that is, like I said, Kaiju is giant monster. Kaijin is when they're man-sized monsters. So, you know, if you think of it in terms of, like, Power Rangers, they fight them, you know, in their regular suits first, and they're Kaijin, and then they grow big, and they become Kaiju, and then they have to jump into their giant robots to fight them. That's the difference there. And this is a pure Kaijin movie. There's no giant monsters in it. Though I suppose they could have gone that route. They could have had a giant mushroom monster. They do grow, obviously. But they don't, really. Or rather, you don't really see much of the mushrooms at all in this movie. There's a particular philosophy about monster movies that I'm kind of grappling with, and I'm specifically grappling with it in terms of this movie, and I'll talk about it in this podcast. the Jaws theory of monsters, where you don't want to see the monster a lot. You want to keep it in shadow. You want to keep it hidden, and you don't want to just see it head on all that much in your movie because you want to build suspense. And I totally understand that as an idea, but that's not what Jaws was about. The reason Jaws did that wasn't because they wanted to build suspense. They did it because the fucking Jaws robot didn't work. So they kind of accidentally happened into this thing that now everybody gives that movie credit for that, like they were geniuses for hiding the shark that you had to hide because if you didn't, you would see that like gears were popping out of it. But more than that, you have movies like Monsters is the one I keep thinking of. It's the director who went on to do the 2014 Godzilla film and brought that sensibility to that film as well, where you don't see Godzilla all that much. I always point to, there's literally a scene where, there's actually two that I point to. One where you're going to see Godzilla, oh my god, he's gonna tramps through the town there, and then they cut to him on TV, and then you don't see what happened. And then later on, they're running away from Godzilla, and they're literally closing a door in our faces so that we don't see Godzilla fighting the monster. And it's so fucking insulting to me. It's like, I want to see Godzilla fight, goddammit. And that was my big problem with that movie. You don't see enough Godzilla fights. And I know snooty-ass fucking pretentious film goers will say, well, it's good that you don't see the monster because that's what they did in Jaws. And I'm kind of questioning that. And I'm questioning that in this movie because it's like the halfway point before you see any real physical indication of the monsters, and even then it's only the intermediary form of the zombie monster, and then you don't see the actual Matango creatures, the mushroom monsters, until like the last 20 minutes of the movie. And admittedly, well, I'm gonna say I like this movie overall, and admittedly, once you see them, once they do factor into the plot, I mean, it's effective. And arguably, it is effective because they were set up so much and you didn't see them, but I don't know that it wouldn't have been as effective or more effective had you seen more of them. Had they utilized more of the spooky atmospheric location, they're in a jungle, you could see mushrooms creeping around in the jungle. You get kind of one scene of that, but it's very quick. You know, you could have had more suspense if you had more of a sense of these creatures stalking these characters. And I feel like, whereas, again, with Jaws, it was a total accident that they didn't show the monster. I think they wanted to show it, obviously, because, you know, they built it to be seen. Whereas with this, I definitely think the director was keeping it cloaked on purpose. I mean, obviously, budget concerns are evident, but I think this was his vision, that you wouldn't see them until the final act. And, I mean, so the fact that it is more part of the design, I think it's more organic in terms of the reveal feels like it makes sense more. There's a big problem with it that I'll get to when I get to that part, but I think I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but that is something that I'm grappling with as I decide whether I just liked this movie a lot or whether I loved it, because I feel like the movie in my head where you saw the creatures more might have been one that at least I would have preferred. But anyway, you start out with these characters, and this is a weird thing that I noticed, and I almost know this wasn't intentional. In fact, it couldn't have been. I guess I could have looked this up, but I didn't. When was Gilligan's Island? That was like the 70s, right? It wasn't the 60s, was it? Because this was 63. I think this was before Gilligan's Island. I'm almost certain of it. I could be completely wrong there. But even if it was the 60s, it was probably like the mid to late 60s. And the cast of this movie, with one exception, is archetypally very similar to the cast of Gilligan's Island. You have a professor, you have his student who is sort of like the young, innocent ingenue, sort of the Marianne character, you have the sultry, seductive actress as the woman, you have the skipper, you have, basically, I'm calling him the asshole. I didn't write down any of their actual names, but he's essentially the Gilligan character, except instead of being comically and affectionately dumb, he's like an idiot, but kind of an asshole as well. He's the saboteur kind of guy, the betrayer guy. And he's literally fucking dressed like Gilligan. He's wearing red with the white hat. The only exception to this is there's no... Oh, and there's a rich guy. There's a, you know, there's a Mr. Howell. There's no Mrs. Howell, though. There's a guy who's like a writer who is the other character. And I don't know, maybe they're gay lovers. Maybe that was subtext that I just didn't pick up on. Maybe so it was a more progressive version of that relationship in this thing that I'm clearly saying was not actually a reference to that, just a coincidence. But no, it's just weird Gilligan's Island parallels for this lost at sea on a deserted island movie. And I don't know if maybe I just imagined that because I was going to say, like, I wasn't thinking of Gilligan's Island. I wasn't like, well, it's an island thing, so clearly Gilligan's Island. But that was just something weird that I noticed. And most of the movie is just about these characters, and, well, you learn about them. You learn about how they behave in safe circumstances, and then things become unsafe. And as they find themselves on this island and they're unraveling this mystery, they find there was a previous ship that crashed there, and apparently they were there on purpose. They were investigating things on the island. They had Geiger counters, and there's references to radiation and mutation and all this stuff. They're reading their notes and everything. And then that's when they learn that there are mushrooms on this island, and in the notes they say, you shouldn't eat them, they're irradiated, and they have weird effects on people, and they don't really go further than that. But so they know not to eat the mushrooms, and it's not until they're compelled to eat them because they have no other food left that then things kind of get into another gear. But up to that point, it's just these characters in this sort of Lord of the Flies scenario where it's a slow burn descent into, you know, desperation and division and madness. And it's done very well. If you'd taken out the monster mushrooms completely and just made it this story, it still would have been enjoyable. And that, like, sounds like a compliment that I'm making to the movie, and I guess technically it is, insofar as I think they wrote those characters well and they wrote those dilemmas well. I want this to be a killer mushroom movie. I don't want to be able to take out the mushroom monsters and the movie still makes sense. I want them to be integral to the story, and that's where I'm kind of going back and forth with the, you know, we should have seen more of them thing. But, like I said, the dynamic between these characters and just how far they go into their kind of desperate mode where people are betraying each other and threatening to kill each other, and some of them are, some of them are tasked to find food, but it's like, well, what the fuck? These mushrooms are here. I know they said they're irradiated, but why do we trust them? We need to eat. Why don't we eat these things? And sometimes, at one point, the rich guy is bartering with the asshole, where, like, he's able to find turtle eggs. He found a stash of them that nobody else has found, and he's selling them to the guy, basically on the island. And they even mentioned, like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to use this money if we ever get rescued, but I'm betting we are, so I'm gonna keep this money. And then, of course, he's one of the guys that gets shot at the end. Spoilers. Sorry. I say spoilers almost as a joke at this point. I'm going to spoil these movies from now on. But he gets shot, and you see all the money splashed out, his hubris, you know, sprawled out before him. But it's just, there are a lot of moments like that, little moments like that. Well, culminations of a slow buildup of dread and just really great interpersonal conflict that really make this movie work. Again, even if you don't care at all about the fact that at some point they're going to get attacked by mushrooms. But for me, somebody that's a huge sort of sci-fi fan and came at this knowing this guy made Godzilla, going, at some point they're going to get attacked by mushrooms, right? I think I saw a mushroom. I think I saw the shadow of a mushroom. And then at one point, and I said this is about the halfway mark, it's a very well done, well structured scene until the very end. Like I said, I'll get to that. You have like a stalking sequence where clearly there's someone else in the boat. We establish everyone else. We know where they are, and there are footsteps, so somebody else is there. And you haven't seen anything close up as far as any creatures yet. And the assumption at that point is maybe there was a survivor from the previous expedition that they found that has just been here the whole time. And he's creeping around, and there's a guy who's trying to steal food, and he encounters it first, and you see a brief glimpse of it, and that's where you get the kind of radioactive look. They look like zombies just with mushrooms grown on them. But there's this weird edit where you don't necessarily know, like, what happens, where it's like you see him in the window, and the assumption would be that he would just come into the door, but he just doesn't. And then you cut to them all at the dinner table, or the breakfast table the next morning, going, what was that? Was there something? Was it just a ghost? Were we imagining it? And of course, they look out the window and they see footprints, so they weren't imagining it. But, you know, there's no reason why it didn't attack them or do anything, or why they didn't go after it. They didn't, you know, at least you should have showed something to indicate that maybe it just disappeared or something. It's just like a really weird cut. And it took me completely out of the movie because I didn't know what was happening. And the movie was telling me the consequences of it or the after effects of it, but I didn't see anything connecting A to B. I don't know, I mean, I hesitate to say this. I don't believe this to be true, but it almost made me think that, like, was this not a killer mushroom movie at some point? Was this just a survival movie? And then somebody went, like, hey, you're the Godzilla guy. Put a monster in it. And then he went, I guess mushroom monsters? I mean, that can't be the case because it's based on a story that I assume has mushroom creatures in it. And from what I read, this is a fairly faithful adaptation. I think they added some characters, but for the most part, it's the same story. So why not? Maybe that's it. Maybe it's too faithful. Maybe in the original story, they didn't get revealed until the end. And so he was like, well, that's the original story, so that's what I'm going to do. I think my main idea as far as the motives for this is again, just that kind of pretentious thing where, and maybe it's unfair to say pretentious on Ashira Honda's part, but just the idea that, like, no, we shouldn't see it. We need to build up the suspense. And I feel like yeah, I think I'm gonna settle on it. I think it's at a detriment, even though, once the monsters are revealed in the halfway point, and we kind of make this connection between eating the mushrooms and becoming a monster, because that thing, it's not one of them, but it's clearly something that used to be human, so they make that connection, and then it becomes, you know, some people went crazy anyway and ate the mushrooms, and they're trying to compel other people to eat the mushrooms, and I don't know if the suggestion is that the mushrooms are controlling them at that point, or if they're just fucked, because it's the assholes, it's the evil, like, actress lady and the writer who goes crazy, the asshole, like I said, gets killed, but they're already kind of bad people, so I don't know if they're just doing it to fuck with people, or if the mushrooms are compelling them to, like, bring in more so that they can have more of their kind. The movie's not really clear on that, in a way that I didn't necessarily mind. I don't mind that mystery, that ambiguity. The only reason I bring it up is because overall the mechanics or the physics or just the mythology behind these mushroom creatures is not very well developed, and I think ultimately it does suffer for that a little bit. Like I said, there seem to be multiple phases where it's, you know, a regular human that may or may not be being controlled mentally, and then they become a zombie, and then I assume, you never see the transition, but I assume that zombie then eventually becomes one of the full-on mushroom people, where they have, like, a giant mushroom head, you know? It must happen slowly enough that I'm assuming the mushroom people that we do see at the end are either the last expedition, or maybe even, like, indigenous mushroom people that, like, it takes maybe years to fully transform, because you see people that are, like, half mushroom for what is, in the course of the film, days. So I don't know even the timeline or the pace of this thing. And that's something that I do feel needs to be established, especially if the main MacGuffin sort of sci-fi dilemma of your movie is what is essentially a virus or a thing that is slowly transforming a person. I think you need to establish clearly what the phases are and clearly how long it takes. You know, even if you're just doing a zombie movie, I think you need to know, like, does it take hours, days? Even if it can take, you know, a varying amount of time, you need to establish that so that I know what the stakes are and you know, when I should be worried. And you kind of get that with the progress of how much mushroom shit is on their face, but by that point they're evil anyway, so I don't really know what it matters. And again, it just culminates sort of in the end where, you know, he goes to the mushroom lair, the professor and the ingenue, the student, are the last ones left, ultimately, and they go to the mushroom lair, and he goes with the gun, because she gets kidnapped by two of the mushroom zombies, and again, I don't even know who they are, necessarily, because they aren't the crew. The crew either dies, gets infected, or, you know, joins up with the mushrooms, and they become sort of like cult members, but these zombies have to be something else. They were there already. But anyway, they kidnap the girl, and he goes after her, but he finds she's already eaten the mushrooms, and so he's all alone, and it's sort of like an Ash from Evil Dead moment where he's being attacked by all these monsters and just freaking out and going crazy. And very fun, ultimately. But I don't know, I wanted more of that. I wanted them to factor more into the story. I wanted the dilemma of we are not just stuck on this island, but we are alone with monsters to be a bigger part of the story. And that's, I mean, as much as I enjoyed the stuff that wasn't that, I don't know, I feel like that is a flaw of the film. And also just the sedentary nature of the monsters themselves. The Matango mushroom creatures, they never outwardly attack. Maybe they're sending those zombies after them. Maybe the zombies are acting independently. I don't know. I'm assuming because it's mushrooms that they have some sort of, like, mycelial network hive mind. Or at least, I mean, that's just my headcanon. I don't know if every episode I'm going to mention headcanon, but the Matango monsters aren't really that active. Even when you go into their lair, they just sort of jump out of the side, like out of the bushes, and kind of spook you. And they do try to swarm you, but they're so slow that they're very easy to get away from. So the fact that they're, oh, it's mushroom monsters, that's the thing about this movie. They're not really that much of a threat, honestly. I mean, the threat is your own human weakness. Do you succumb to eating the mushroom? And that's another thing. They're mushrooms. Can't they spore? Can't they attack you without you having to eat them? I feel like that's kind of a weird requirement that you need to eat these things before you become them. I mean, that's interesting, I guess, that you know, you are what you eat. And that's another thing, too. At one point in the movie, you establish, or the movie establishes that the writer and the woman who went off on their own, they ate the mushrooms, and they became part mushroom. And then she seduces the rich guy and says, come with me, I know you're starving, I have food for you to eat. And then she tricks him into eating the mushroom, and then at this point she's not visually mushroom yet, but the writer is, and then he eats him, and then he looks over and sees the writer guy has like half a mushroom face. And he's like, oh my god, he's like, yeah, you're gonna become a mushroom. And it's a, you know, a powerful scene for what it is. But then like two scenes later, the professor and the ingenue student are talking, and they seem to understand this, even though they weren't present for that scene, and there's no real, like, they haven't encountered these creatures other than just sort of in the shadows and things, but then they're talking about, like, I'm not gonna go eat that mushroom and then become a mushroom, and she's like, but we're so hungry, maybe it's the only way to survive, and it's like, well, how the fuck do you know that? You know, and it's just that thing where a little bit more time spent building out the mythology and revealing that mythology would have helped some of these things where I'm confused as to what characters are, what their motivations are, where they are at any given time, emotionally and physically sometimes even. And, you know, it jumps around a lot, but not enough that it ruins the movie, just enough that it took me out of the movie and it kept it from reaching that threshold where I would call this, you know, a classic sort of lost treasure. Very fun movie, especially if you're looking for these kind of obscure movies that are curiosities. I would definitely recommend it, but I don't know, it's rough around the edges, I'll say that. And it's not, I said at the beginning, this isn't the movie that I expected it to be. It's also not the movie I really wanted it to be, and I think it's really unfair to judge a movie based on that standard. I mean, you should judge it for what it is, not what you wanted it to be. But what it is, I feel like misses a lot of the potential of what this movie could be based on its premise. I love the premise of this movie. I love the idea. I don't know why, but I've always loved the idea of mushrooms that are, like, sentient and, like, I just think they look weird. They look like monsters. They're unlike, I don't know if you know this, fungus, mushrooms, they're unlike anything else on the planet. Like, they don't really fit into the normal taxonomy of things. They are seemingly almost extraterrestrial, not technically, but that's, actually there's a theory that they may have come from space, that spores may have come to prehistoric Earth because they can survive in vacuum. They're just very mysterious, I think, especially when connected to sort of Lovecraftian stuff. I think, you know, that's, there's a lot of untapped potential there. I can't think of another killer mushroom movie, and like I said, this one didn't quite live up to what I wanted in a killer mushroom movie, but it is a very good film. Like I said, you can take out the mushrooms and still enjoy it, and maybe that's the best way to enjoy it, if you just pretend that the killer mushroom stuff isn't a part of this movie until the end, when it actually is, you know, fairly decently applied, then I think you might get more out of it. If you spend the whole movie, as I did, waiting for the mushroom people to come, then, and I think that's probably why the American title did the movie a disservice, you know, I feel like you're going to be disappointed. And I won't say that I'm disappointed. That's too far, but I am a little sad that I didn't get more mushroom on man action. But anyway, that's Matango. That's pretty much all I have for this movie. I did forget one thing. Apparently, I don't go much into interpreting movies, like the themes and what the director intended for what they're about, but this one, the director actually apparently commented on what the movie is about, and it is explicitly an anti-drug metaphor. I don't know that it's like a full-on Reefer Madness, like propaganda film. It's a little too oblique for that. And I thought it was weird because they're mushrooms, and my immediate connection to mushrooms is psychedelic mushrooms, but they don't really incorporate that element into it all. But it is just the idea of, like, drug addiction as body snatcher, where, you know, your friends get into this fucking fucked up thing, and then they're not your friends anymore. They are more devoted to the thing that they're addicted to than to you, to their friends and family. So that's what happens when you eat the mushrooms. You are compelled to eat more of them, and then you become like the mushrooms. You become more them than human, and so then your human friends have lost you, and it's sort of the tragedy of that. And that's actually a very deliberate point in this movie, apparently. And it works for what it is. It does have that kind of creepy body snatcher feel where the people you trust suddenly aren't the people you can trust anymore. And I think I've said this before on this podcast, that's something that is very primal in me in terms of a fear. That the 70s Invasion of the Body Snatcher movie was actually the first movie that I ever saw as a kid that scared me, that gave me nightmares. This, I don't think it gets quite to that level, to the extent that, had I seen this as a kid, I don't think it would have triggered that necessarily, but it is all over the place. It is definitely part of the subtext of the movie going through, and I think it makes it more interesting as a result. And it is. It's a very interesting movie. The characters are all well-formed, and their interpersonal relationships, their struggles are all well-realized and well-executed, and just on that level, I would recommend this movie. Almost to the point where I would recommend it to you even if you don't care about sci-fi or horror. If you just want some really good human drama, this is some very good human drama. And the actors all pull it off. It's just, like I said, the atmosphere, the way they shoot it, the shot composition, the shot selection. It's all done very well to to put all these people in this very tense situation and just ramp up the tension, and the dread sort of grows, not unlike a fungus around them, and that is interesting enough to justify the ticket price. So I would definitely recommend Matango, and especially if you're somebody looking for something that you haven't seen before, like unlike anything you've seen before, this has those kind of weird touches that will satisfy you. So anyway, that's Matango. That's my review, so I'm going to pause this right now, and then I'm going to come back with my 10-point plan for how to turn Matango into a cinematic universe. And I'm back, and I have my 10-point plan for how to turn Matango into a cinematic universe. And I'm actually thinking, I'm kind of curious what I put in between the review and this point right here, because normally I put a little snippet of dialogue, but obviously this is a podcast designed primarily for an English-speaking audience, and this is a Japanese movie. I watched the subtitled version, not the dubbed version. I don't have access to a dubbed version. I don't know. I'm assuming the American TV one was dubbed, but it's just going to be kind of weird if you just hear a bunch of weird Japanese dialogue in the middle there, but I'll figure that out. Anyway, I got to say, first, spoilers abound from this point on. If there's anything about this movie I haven't already spoiled, I will probably be doing so going forward, because I have to talk about the specifics in order to sequelize and prequelize and so forth. So there's that. Also, if you want to email this podcast, you can do so at headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. That's headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. That's canon spelled like the military instrument, not like what you would think head cannon was actually spelled like. You can also visit my website if you discover me on iTunes, as I imagine most people do. My website is headcanonpodcast.blogspot.com. You can find all the episodes there. When you email, you can send in requests. I will review any movie that's requested of me, and I will build out the cinematic universe for that movie. I'll basically do anything that's requested of me, as long as it's not like a snuff film or something. And if you are finding me on iTunes, please subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. That really does help. So anyway, all of that's out of the way. Now we start with the sequel, as always. I'm going to pitch a sequel to Matango, and then go from there. And the sequel, I think, I mean, to me it's obvious. I didn't explain the very, very end of this movie in my review, and it's, I'm kind of conflicted on whether I liked it or not. I feel like it throws a wrench into the proceedings that I don't really like. What little mythology was established for the Matango creatures, I feel like this kind of throws it out the window. But anyway, what happens is, the professor finds that the woman that he's fallen in love with over the course of the movie, his student, has become one of the mushroom people. She's eating the mushroom, and she's been taken over by them. So he just flees, and eventually he gets rescued. He's on his own. He's the last one left, and you see a ship goes by. And I forgot to mention this, but this was actually a story within a story. You saw the end at the beginning. Sort of like Frankenstein, where he's in an asylum, and he's talking about what drove him mad, essentially, and that's him telling the story of his experience on this island. And conspicuously, you did not see his face. You saw him looking out the window. And they framed it in a way where you don't necessarily pick up that he's hiding anything, but then when they cut back at the end, you find out he turns around and he's got the mushrooms on his face. The process has begun. So at some point he was exposed to and accidentally ate or was tricked into eating the mushrooms. They never show that. That's why I think it's kind of messed up, because they don't really see him doing that. They never show, like, I was waiting for something like maybe you had a shot of the actress, like, cutting up some mushrooms into the food, like, surreptitiously, and, like, you flash back to that, like, oh, that's how it happened, or something like that. I don't know. Or maybe just, I don't know how it would have worked, but because the only alternative explanation is there's a way to get infected without eating them, and that kind of takes away something from the story, I think. But anyway, he's infected by the mushrooms, and these doctors are looking at him, and he's just kind of insane now. And I'm saying we follow up from that. And obviously he's well on his way to becoming a mushroom person. He goes from, you know, mushroom infected to mushroom zombie to mushroom creature. And so I'm saying he escapes while he's still sort of half mushroom man. He escapes from the asylum, kills a bunch of people, and then escapes into the sewers. And there's like an entire community. I mean, I don't know this for a fact. I'm saying this for the purposes of this movie. There's like an underground community of homeless people that live under Japan. And the idea, and I didn't say this either, but they make a point of saying that moisture obviously encourages the mushrooms to grow. They have a lot of these really cool special effect sequences where you see water going down on them and them sort of expanding. I don't know exactly what the effect is that they're using, but you see the mushrooms sort of growing rapidly in real time. And I'm saying, so he's in he's in the sewers, and of course it's a moisture-rich environment, so it's increasing the rate of his transformation, and he's becoming more and more mushroom-like, and he's also infecting other people. Maybe that'll be sort of the retcon for how do you infect people. Like if they're on dry land or if they're in a dry environment, they can spread either through moisture or through ingestion. So you have to eat them, or if you're around them and it's really wet, it can just sort of diffuse, through your skin, through osmosis, like through your pores. So anyway, he's in this underground civilization of homeless people, and he's slowly infecting them and turning this entire kind of underground world of homeless people into mushroom zombies. And then cut to, like, maybe even a year later, I don't know how long this process would take, but, you know, they become this sort of urban legend where people are sort of disappearing, being snatched into the sewers and into alleys and shit. And, you know, there's obviously an investigation, it's, you know, missing persons cases, but, you know, they assume maybe it's a serial killer or a syndicate or something. They don't know the horrible truth. Sort of like Chud, if you ever saw that movie. And then a hurricane comes. And the hurricane, of course, makes the entire island of Japan, or at least that one coast of it. I don't know. I guess, is Tokyo even on a coast, or is it centralized? I don't know. But Tokyo is washed through a hurricane, and the mushrooms take this opportunity to rise out of the sewers and infect more and more people, and it becomes like a zombie movie set during a hurricane with these mushroom creatures attacking people, and the hurricane knocks out a nuclear power plant, so like Fukushima, and so the radiation makes them grow even bigger, and then you have like giant, like tank-sized mushroom creatures invading the city, and so it's a giant sort of like a Cloverfield-style city-set monster movie. Or maybe Pacific Rim, if you want to use that reference, but of course, there's no giant robot to fight them. It's just, you know, the military fighting various sizes of mushroom-like creatures. So that's my sequel. That gets me to prequel. And for that, I think the obvious choice is just to do the original expedition that the characters find in Matango, the one that was experimenting on the mushrooms that wrote the journal, figuring out what they were about. And I'm saying sort of like the remake of The Thing, where I say remake. They said it was a prequel where it was about the Scandinavian team, only they, for some reason, had like the exact same experience as the team from the original Thing, or rather the John Carpenter remake of The Thing, so it's sort of a remake/prequel, whereas this is a full-on prequel. It's this military unit, and I don't know, I'm going back and forth on it, because they say that, well, they estimate based on the rotting of the sails that the previous ship was maybe like a year or more there, but I'm thinking, I don't know if maybe you could just, maybe they just didn't know anything about ships and how they rot, and so like maybe it's even older than that. Maybe it was like a World War II vessel, and maybe this was where the Nazis and the Japanese were testing their own nuclear material to possibly get the bomb before the Allies did. And of course, in the process, they created the Matango creatures by accident, and then started to study them, possibly to convert them into like a weapon of war, to reverse engineer them into a living weapon. And so they were like taking, you know, prisoners of war, and maybe even like, you know, Jewish prisoners, and subjecting them to human experiments to turn them into the mushroom zombies. And maybe those are some of the mushroom zombies we found in the original film that survived. And I'm thinking maybe we take that as the, rather than it being a one-to-one-to-one transformation, it's not infected to zombie to mushroom creature. I'm thinking maybe the mushroom zombies are their own thing. That's what happens if you die before becoming a mushroom creature. I think you eat the mushrooms, you're about to be transformed into a mushroom creature. But if you die along the way, then they just sort of take over your corpse and use it as like a robotic servant almost. Yeah, it's reminiscent of, if you ever read Super God, it was a Garth Ennis? Yeah. No, Warren Ellis. One of those two. I always mix them up. It's a book about, like, militarization of superheroes, and one of them is this kind of mushroom creature from space, and the runner for that is, you know, he only grows on dead things, and then later on he's literally growing on a dead thing. It's a really cool scene, but that's sort of the idea behind the mushroom zombies, is they take advantage of the idea of mushrooms as kind of carrion eaters. And so that would be the prequel is this, well, I don't know if you want to make it like Nazis figuring it out and they're like the quote-unquote good guys are the protagonists, and they all get killed, or if it's maybe an allied ship. They imply in the original Matango movie that they couldn't tell what place it was from. It was seemed to be, like, deliberately kept secret, whether it was from America or Japan or whatever. They had different languages everywhere. So I don't know if maybe it's, like another organization that knew about the Nazi experiments and followed them or something like that. But anyway, it'd just be that story, either unveiling those experiments and letting them out. Maybe the Nazis left them behind or all died, and then this crew finds them, and then they suffer the same fate, and then that sets up everything that happens in Matango. I don't know exactly how you would do it as far as the timeline goes, but that would be my general idea. And then that would be the prequel. And that gets me to spin-off, and there aren't really a lot of interesting enough characters to spin off other than the one I already spin off for my sequel, so I'm saying we spin off the Matango themselves, the mushroom creatures. And I'm doing it in a really weird, roundabout way, where, yeah, I mentioned there was the theory that, mushrooms are from space, that they're extraterrestrial, because spores can survive in vacuum, so if another planet got destroyed and the spores, you know, flow on solar winds and eventually landed on prehistoric Earth, they could have seeded into the ecosystem and become part of our taxonomy, but maybe that's the case in real life, maybe it's not, but I'm positing that is a true thing in the context of this series of movies, where, and this is where it gets weird. If you've ever heard of the stoned ape theory, is that primitive apes ate magic mushrooms and hallucinated, and that's what spurred on the mental evolution that eventually led to human thought and human consciousness, that it expanded their minds so much that they were able to use tools, and, you know, they were able to kind of jumpstart what would essentially be human evolution. That's the stoned ape theory, and it's an alternative sort of fringe theory of how we evolved. And I'm saying that's true as well in the context of this series, and you combine all of those things together, and you have essentially a organic form of interstellar communication and contact, where the substructure of the universe, planets are connected by this kind of mushroom psychedelic communications network, where mushrooms will travel from planet to planet and intercede into the ecosystem, evolving the species on them that always start out primitive, and this is the X factor that jumpstarts all civilizations to where they have consciousness, and then psychedelic experiences via magic mushrooms basically connect the human mind to this vast interstellar communication network where you're connected to the cosmos and you can communicate with aliens, like a lot of people say they do when they take mushrooms. And so that's this idea, is like that's how we're talking to the rest of the universe, and the rest of the universe is waiting for us to evolve even further and develop the technology to travel into space and so forth, and then they'll all come and converge on us and kind of welcome us into this, you know, hallucinogenic mushroom federation. But something went wrong on Earth, and that thing was the Matango creatures. There was radiation that irradiated some of these mushrooms on this one island, but that basically poisoned the well for the entire planet. Because and it's a thing that sometimes happens on planets with that experiment with nuclear weapons, that it perverts that mycelial network that's connecting the cosmos, or at least that particular node of it, which is planet Earth. So instead, we get an invasion force of all these other species that have, like, mushroom shit grown into their bodies, because they're, like, half mushroom, half alien, and they're all part of the same telepathic hallucinogenic network, but they need to destroy the Earth, because otherwise it could poison the entire network. If these Matango creatures get free, if they take over the Earth, and then that's how we develop the technology to go off world. If the Matango creatures are controlling us to travel to other planets to infect them with this perverted version of this, then everybody's fucked. So they have to destroy our Earth while they still can before it spreads. So we get this alien invasion of mushroom people to fight our version of the mushroom people, and then humans are caught in the middle. And that's my weird fucking spinoff for Matango that required a lot of explanation and a lot of fringe theories that you probably weren't aware of. But anyway, that's my spinoff. And that gets me to crossover. And for crossover, I had a lot of incidental ideas. None of them were good enough that I really liked them enough to settle on them, so I'm just going to throw them all out. My first thought was ZPG. That was my sixth episode of this podcast. I talk about ZPG. And at the end of that movie, that was about this future world where they outlawed pregnancy to the curb overpopulation, so for 30 years nobody could get pregnant, and this family that has a kid,
they escape, and they end up on this island, and the twist is it's an island that's irradiated from the prior nuclear war that led to the dystopian future. So I'm saying you could just have it be the Matango Island, and the nuclear war also created the Matango monsters, or at least, you know, spurred them on and made them bigger and stronger and, you know, able to leave their one place and actually attack people, unlike the actual movie. But if you don't want to go that route, I was also thinking if you want to do, like, this could work with either Cheech and Chong or Jay and Silent Bob, where, like, some of the mushrooms kind of get to the States, and these hippies at this commune, where either, like I said, either Cheech and Chong or Jay and Silent Bob are living, get a hold of them and start eating them and start turning into mushroom creatures. And so it's these two classic sort of stoner characters, you know, fighting hallucinogenic monsters that they, like, they have to resist the urge not to eat themselves because they want to get high, but instead they've got to fight basically monsters and zombies and escape alive. So, like, a horror movie with these kind of classic stoner comedy duos. Or maybe have them both in there. Maybe have Cheech and Chong meets Jay and Silent Bob in Night of the Matango or something. I don't know. But that was also not my best. I'm also saying, and this was a weird one, Troll 2, because if you remember, the trolls in Troll 2, which aren't actually trolls, they're goblins, but they eat plants, so they have to turn organic matter into plants, so they turn people into living plants. So I'm saying the guy, like, maybe like the original expedition that we saw in Matango, one of the girls, her father finds out from the testimony of the insane guy who ultimately turns into a mushroom monster. They find out from him that his daughter died on this island, and much like Dennis Hopper in Texas Chainsaw 2, he wants revenge. So he finds the ultimate predator to these living plant monsters, the trolls from Troll 2, the goblins, because they eat plants and they're ravenous, and he hires a SWAT team to, like, kidnap them and throw them on this island so that it's trolls versus Matango mushroom monsters. Again, pretty stupid. I don't know. I couldn't think of one that I liked so much that I could settle on it. And the only other one I had, I referenced before, Pacific Rim, because I originally thought for when I get to my gritty reboot, I was thinking Guillermo del Toro, but I ultimately went with somebody else. But I'm thinking, you know, you had all these fights in the ocean. I'm thinking one of these Jaegers, one of these giant robots, gets destroyed by the monster and crash lands on the Matango Island, but, you know, in pieces. But its radioactive core sort of spurs on the mushroom creatures to, they're attracted to it, sort of like moths to a flame, and it also further mutates them. And then they all sort of grow and merge around the framework of this dead robot into a giant anthropomorphic mushroom monster that then attacks the closest thing to it, which is Japan. So it's a giant mushroom robot hybrid that the other Jaegers have to be brought out of retirement in order to fight it. So that's that, and I think that's actually that's it for my crossovers. I have nothing else, and like I said, I had nothing else that really I liked more than anything else. That gets me to Gritty Reboot, like I said, and I was initially thinking Guillermo del Toro, but I don't want to waste him. I try not to reuse directors unless I absolutely have to, unless I can't think of anybody else. That's also why I didn't want to go with Cronenberg, because I've referenced him on a previous one. And I started thinking, apparently Steven Soderbergh loves this movie and wanted to remake it at some point. And that'd be an interesting version of it, given his other work. Apparently this scared the crap out of him as a kid, and he's always wanted to do it, but he couldn't get the rights from Toho. So, but I wouldn't go with him either, necessarily. And I finally settled on Jordan Volk Roberts, who, if you don't know, he did the King Kong Skull Island movie. And it's just a really great supernatural jungle action fantasy horror movie. And he did this really great thing with it where he sort of made it like a Miyazaki movie, like a live-action Miyazaki movie. In terms of the creatures, they all had a vaguely fantasy-oriented aesthetic to them. And I feel like you can bring that to this world as well, and also just, you know, tell the same story just, you know, with almost like a dark fantasy tone. And I'm thinking, I don't really have a lot of interest in recasting the characters. I would just cast all unknowns. That none of them really stand out or, like, oh, I think a specific actor would work for them. You know, if I had to settle for someone for the main guy, I'm thinking maybe Jake Gyllenhaal, because he's good at going crazy, and he has to go crazy at the end. I was thinking you could, like I said, just adding in some of the things that I think would have made the original better. Yes, utilizing the jungle more, maybe even having, like, a survivor from the original expedition that was alive. I have this image in my head of, you know, those Japanese hats they have that are, like, the wide brims, kind of like conical hats, I think, or, like, I don't know what you would call them, but, like, he has, like, a mushroom head that he, like, tore off one of the mushroom creatures and is wearing, like, a hat. I think that's an interesting visual. But using the monsters more in the remake, which I think invariably they would. I don't think you could do a movie with this kind of tone and pacing today. I think you'd have to add more monsters and add more visual panache to it. But that's what I would do for the reboot. I don't really have much more than that. But that gets me to the back half, which is all the stuff that is in movies, starting with the TV adaptation. And for the TV adaptation, I think the obvious touchstone would be Lost. Great show. I love that show. I know it gets a bad rap. People say, well, the last season, whatever. I like the last season. I like the last episode. It wasn't Limbo. And everybody's like, well, it was Limbo after all, even though they denied it. It wasn't. It was sort of Limbo adjacent, but that was fine. But anyway, I'm saying a show sort of like Lost, an overarching mystery show set on a deserted tropical island, or not-so-deserted tropical island. Obviously, you add more elements to sort of serialize it, make it, you know, a longer arc-driven story. I'm thinking you have, like, other indigenous people on the island. You have, I was thinking maybe there's like a medicine man, not a traditional medicine man. I'm referring to the movie with Sean Connery, like a white guy, a European guy who came to the island looking for, you know, miraculous new plant-based drugs, and then he became sort of the healer and god of this like cargo cult that was on the island. And like, and they're cannibals. The reason they're never susceptible to the mushrooms is because they only eat people, and so like they breed people to eat. Like they have an entire subsection of their cult, and then anybody that crash lands in the island, they eat them for dinner, and then so that's why they're free of the mushroom infection. And I don't know, I guess you'd have to say that maybe the medicine man figured it out and still eats, or maybe he's a cannibal too, I don't know. Then you can have them as sort of, you know, antagonists throughout the series, and then eventually you would get to the same ending essentially as you do in the movie at the end of season one, or maybe in the end of season two, and then maybe the start of season two or three is they're back on land, they're back in you know, on dry land, and the mushrooms get out. I'm not saying it's like the apocalyptic scenario as I posited in my sequel, but it's something close to that, where, you know, the mushrooms get disseminated across, if you want to say Japan, or even maybe America, if you want to make it a solely American thing, where it becomes sort of like a drug, like crocodile. Like, and I reference that because it's a drug that obviously fucks you up, but people take it anyway. So it's like people go, you know, you're gonna turn into a fucking mushroom, man, if you eat this. I say, yeah, but it's just so addictive, I can't. Because like, why would people take crocodile? It turns you into a fucking scaly monster. But it's sort of like that. It's spreading as this kind of, you know, meth hallucinogenic drug across the country. And then of course eventually you would get to that sort of apocalyptic scenario as so many of these creatures start springing up. And then I think if you need an even longer arc for the story, I would say instead of it being like radiation and you know, atomic bomb stuff, maybe it is explicitly Lovecraftian. Maybe the creation of these Matango creatures is sort of the vanguard of a larger Lovecraftian menace, where, you know, this is like the just the after effects of the presence of Lovecraftian monsters. It's they leave behind this fungus that eventually grows into these creatures. Like, they're just the flotsam and jetsam of the cosmic horror that is some Lovecraftian monster or pantheon of Lovecraftian monsters. But they're also, that also means they're the thing that if you see it, you know that one is near or one is coming. So there's of course cults of monstrous god worshippers that see the Matango as sort of like their like the proof of their devotion, of their faith, and so they follow them and worship them sort of as demigods or avatars. And so you have that sort of that arc slowly building until you eventually have like fucking tentacles from space coming down. So anyway, that would be my pitch for Matango, the TV show. And that gets me to video game. And normally with horror games like this, I try to shy away from survival horror, but I feel like that's just perfect for this, especially for the jungle scenario. I'm thinking of one of the Resident Evil games was set in a jungle, I think. I'm also thinking Dino Crisis, like an old-school survival horror game with the set cameras and everything. But the one element I would add is, if you ever played a game called Eternal Darkness, it was a survival horror game, but they had this sanity mechanic, or rather insanity mechanic, where the less sanity you had, you would lose sanity as you would go through, as you would encounter supernatural things, and the more insane you would get, the more you would see, like, glitches, like, things that you might even think are real glitches in the game, where, like, you'd see static, or, you know, you'd switch levels, or, you know, things would be crawling around that aren't actually there, yeah. And it would generally affect your gameplay and kind of fuck you up as you played, and made you feel as insane as your character was. So I'm saying, if you have to eat the mushrooms, or if you're force-fed the mushrooms, or even if you encounter them, then the first stage is hallucinations, and you start seeing things that aren't there, and it affects gameplay, and then eventually you have to escape the killer mushrooms. That's what I was, the only thing I was thinking for a video game. And then I was also thinking maybe, you know, I wouldn't call it co-op, but like you're one person, but you're switching between characters. But as you switch between characters, and I don't know if another game does this, the characters you aren't playing as still operate, and you can set, like, you know, this is a character, I want him to find food, so I'm going to program him with various actions. His priority is finding food. and this character is repairing the ship. And you can go back and forth between them, but they're acting when you're not playing as them, and they can get fucking infected or killed or kidnapped. Maybe there's like a danger alarm if something's near them, but when you come back to the character, you might not be able to, suddenly you might not be able to control them because they've been taken over by the Matango, and then they've been acting against your wishes, maybe even directly opposed to whatever you program them to do. Maybe they're sabotaging the ship or destroying the food stores, you know, if you don't keep track of them. So then you have that to worry about, as well as your own sanity as you go through the game. So anyway, that's my idea for Matango, the video game. And for the merchandise, my first thought was Chia Pets. Like a mushroom version of Chia Pets, where like you grow your own Matango monsters out of real life mushrooms. I don't know. I think that'd be cool. Or like an action figure with like mushroom spores on it, so like you leave it out in the sun and water it, and then it eventually grows into like a mushroom creature. Or I guess it would be one of the mushroom zombies. But my other thought was to make it sort of a board game, and this is sort of similar to the video game I was pitching. But if you've ever played like a co-op board game like Dead of Winter, sort of similar to that, where you're all working together, but everybody has different win conditions, and one person's win condition might be you are secretly infected by the Matango and you have to sabotage the rest of them. So I'm thinking something like that. I think that'd be fun. Yeah, Dead of Winter is probably the best example of that. I would very much recommend that game as well. It's a zombie survival horror board game with co-op play, and invariably one person is always, you know, giving away the settlement to the zombies. But it's something like that, just with mushroom creatures. And you have to repair the boat or various other things in order to escape the island ultimately. So anyway, that's my merchandise, and that gets me to porn parody. And this time, I don't know whether I should be proud of this or not. As always, porn parody, it's just about the title. It's about, you know, the porn parody title, like Edward Scissorhands becomes Edward Penis Hands, A Clockwork Orange becomes A Clockwork Orgy, and they never do it anymore. It's not clever anymore. It's just Pirates of the Caribbean, a porn parody, or This Ain't the Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, I want to bring that back. And so I've got my porn parody title, and you know what? Fuck it. I am a little proud of this. It's Matango, Attack of the Mushroom People. Okay, I'm not proud of it. My Wang, yo! Attack of the Mushroom Head. The fact that I had to affect a specific voice just in order to say it. My Wang, yo! Attack of the Mushroom Head. I'm thinking this is like a solo masturbation series of videos where you're just a dude jerking off in your face, and of course the mushroom head is his dick. Did I have to explain that? I don't think so. But yeah, that's my porn parody title. And I guess there's a plot for you too if you needed it. But that gets me to drinking game. And I'm saying for the drinking game, anytime you see somebody backstabbing another character or pulling a gun to them, you get quite a bit of that. Every time you see some misogyny, every time they make the girls wait outside, or they explore the men explore the danger, or they make the girls get the water or cook them food, then you take a drink. And I'm saying you finish your drink whenever you see actual evidence of mushroom people, because there's not that much of that in the movie, so you should take that opportunity to drink a lot more. Especially because you're watching a movie about mushroom people without mushroom people in it, and you're like, oh, I gotta take a drink to get myself through this. But anyway, that's my drinking game. As always, I don't recommend you actually play it. I don't drink myself. That's for comedy purposes only. Don't kill yourself via alcohol poisoning, for my account. But that's it. I sound a little drunk now. I think I'm slurring my speech. I've been talking for an hour, and I'm a little tired. But anyway, that's my podcast. And now, all that's left is to tell you the next episode that I'm going to talk about. I already, like I said, I used to do these randomly every episode. Now I do them all at random, all from the beginning, so I know the 10 things I'm going to do for this block of 10 episodes. And the next one is actually something I'm really excited about. This is another one of those that I've been wanting to watch for a while. Not quite as long as Matango, but for a while. It's my sci-fi entry for this block. Remember, they're separated by genres and categories now. This was foreign film. Next is going to be sci-fi. And it's a movie called Project Metal Beast. And I've never seen it, but I'm almost certain, based on the cover and things I've seen, that it is about a cybernetic werewolf. Oh, I can't fucking wait for that. So that's going to be next week. Thank you for listening, everybody. I'm Ben, this has been Headcanon, and as Johnny Red says, walk on water, eat bullets, and shit ice cream. Goodbye, everybody.